This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today with our guest, Danielle Shoemaker, no relation to Steve Shoemaker, spelled differently in fact, but we're talking about the legalization of marijuana. This is an interesting ethical issue for our time, and welcome to Danielle.
Thank you.
Glad you could be here. Danielle is the assistant director of the State of Illinois Normal Organization, N-O-R-M-L, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. How'd you get interested in that, Danielle?
Actually, I began just general activist work in Amnesty International, a local chapter of that. And through that, I learned about the racial disparities in the war on drugs, the fact that 90% of drug offenders in prison in Illinois are African American. And I became really fascinated with drug laws and how that affects African American communities and just society in general, how drug laws work in this country.
Now, some people might be surprised that one would get involved with being concerned about the reform of marijuana laws from Amnesty International.
Mm-hmm. Well, Amnesty, there's also a lot of work in Amnesty about Colombia and the situation with cocaine there, human rights violations that go on because of the U.S. drug war and when it's waged in other countries. And Amnesty actually has an official stance against the drug war in the U.S., which when I heard that, I became very interested why they're so careful with their opinions on other issues, such as the war in Iraq. But with the war on drugs, they're very open with the fact that they're completely against it. And I respect Amnesty, so I thought, this well-respected organization is so openly against this, what's wrong? What's going on?
Now, you're a recent college graduate from the University of Illinois. What did you major in?
I'm actually graduating in May.
Ah, and, you're about to graduate. Okay.
In anthropology. And I've trying to double major in political science, but that didn't work out.
So you're majoring in anthropology. You're going to graduate in May. So you've been trained as an anthropologist to analyze data, to look at facts, to get through smoke screens, if I can use that phrase, to try to find out what's really the case. Mm-hmm. And what persuaded you to take this position with the organization Normal that works to reform the current marijuana laws that make the use of marijuana illegal?
The reason I chose that organization is because the director of the Illinois Normal was on campus at an ACLU meeting, and he spoke about the history of prohibition going back to the 1930s. And he said, from his point of view and from a lot of other people's, and I read the book that he cited, it's a historical perspective of marijuana prohibition, and it basically goes back to very few outspoken legislators in the 30s that had problems in New Orleans, Texas, a few other places with lazy Mexicans smoking this weed that they claimed was causing them to commit violent crimes. And it wasn't based in fact. It was just based, in my opinion and many other people's, in racism. And, we want these workers to work harder. We don't want them taking breaks smoking this mysterious weed. And so... the fact that all of this started with just a few racist people was very interesting to me, and that's where he's coming from, and he's the leader of the organization based in Chicago. He's just so intelligent that I started reading a lot and became more interested.
Now, how do you have time to do this in addition to finishing your senior year?
I don't really. I take one class for credit. And it's the one class I need to graduate. I could have graduated last year, but okay. I chose to stick around as a student for another year and take some classes pass-fail and continue my activism as a student because there are so many resources on campus. And if I wasn't a student, I couldn't be president of the organizations that I'm president of. And I really wanted to have that opportunity to lead some of those groups and see what I could learn before graduating. It was just too soon to graduate.
Now, in terms of your work with Normal, let's talk about marijuana. What is marijuana?
Marijuana is different for every person who smokes it. It's a plant that can be very weak, have very weak effects, and can have very strong effects. It's a psychoactive drug.
Where is it grown?
Where? Oh, anywhere. I mean, until it became illegal. It grew in ditches. I mean, that's why you hear ditch weed. It grows on the sides of the road. The most popular place to grow it is the Midwest. There's a lot of it grown in Indiana and Kentucky. So it can really, it grows very easily, and it's everywhere.
Now, the Smithsonian Magazine this month had an article on people growing marijuana in Canada in greenhouses, and apparently it's illegal there, but somehow not as illegal as it is in the United States. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and in Canada, they're on their way to legalizing it completely. And in California, it's grown in large warehouses for medicinal purposes. And it's the same plant that can be, you know, it can also, it's the same plant as industrial hemp. It's a related, it's just a shorter, smaller plant that involves like a lot of cultivation practices to make it have a lot of THC in it. THC is what makes it psychoactive.
And what is THC?
Oh, tetra. It's a long chemical name.
Okay, for the drug within marijuana that gives it its effect. Now, that effect is, some people claim, is helpful for people who may be taking chemotherapy for cancer, for certain treatments for AIDS. What's the current state of, can people in the United States use marijuana if they have a doctor's prescription for it?
It's 7 or 8 federal cases. People who federally are approved to use it, they were part of a study in California. But there's also 9 states that you can get permission on a state level to use it, but it's still illegal federally. So in those states, you're running the risk of the DEA prosecuting you at any time.
Now, are Illinois and Indiana, which are the states that hear this program, are they either one of those in those 9 states where you can legally use marijuana for medicinal purposes if you get permission?
Indiana, definitely not. But in Illinois, since 1978, there's been a law on the books that does allow it technically, but in practice, no one has ever gained access to medical marijuana legally from the Cannabis Control Act of 1978 because that rests on the Illinois State Police giving you permission. And when you apply to get permission with your doctor's recommendation, the police say, well, we're not going to give you permission. It's illegal federally.
I see.
And they're afraid of the federal level.
I see.
And I don't know if you want me to mention the bills that's...
Well, go right ahead, yeah.
In Illinois, there's a bill being voted on Tuesday, and it was introduced less than a month ago in Springfield in both the House and the Senate. And it will revise, if passed, it makes medical marijuana legal immediately, like effective immediately, and it revises the 1978 Cannabis Control Act. And the good part about this bill that they're going to be voting on Tuesday is that it outlines a program. So it's not blindly, you know, medical marijuana and all the scary things that come along with that. It says it has to have a doctor's recommendation for certain conditions that this science panel approves it for. And with your doctor's permission, you or your doctor can be registered so that if you're ever caught with it, you just show your ID and say, no, my doctor approved this. The Department of Health and Human Services approved it. And you can have 6 plants or 1 ounce of usable cannabis. So it actually outlines a very practical program to distribute.
Now, cannabis is just another name for marijuana.
Yeah.
Okay. We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Danielle Schumacher, who is a senior at the University of Illinois, 5th-year senior, is that right?
Fourth.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you were going to graduate very early. Okay. And she's also just recently become the assistant director for the State of Illinois chapter of NORML, the National Organization to Reform Marijuana Laws. If you'd like to contact Danielle, she's allowed me to give out her email address, which is Danielle, DANIELLE, at IllinoisNorml, NORML.org. Here on WILL this weekend, we're doing something a little special for 2 days, yesterday and today, to celebrate the leap year weekend. We're looking for new members. We need to expand our donor base. Right now, only 1 listener in 10 contributes to WILL. And with less tax-based funding, we need to have more listeners who are willing to make a contribution. In order to maintain the level of service that listeners want, we do need to find some new members. And we have a special enticement this weekend. Tom and Catherine Yancey have been friends of WILL for 30 years, and they're celebrating Catherine's leap year birthday, which is today, February 29, they will be making a $29 contribution to match every person who becomes a new friend of WILL this weekend, either by phone or online. So if you will make a gift of at least $29, they will match that. And so we're encouraging people to give us a call to make a pledge. Now, we don't have people in the studio to take that pledge, but we have a wonderful answering machine, and you can reach it at 244-9455. That's 217-244-9455. That's 244-WILL. You can become a friend of WILL right now, or you can contribute online. We have a secure website if you'd like to use a credit card at WILL.UIUC.edu. Basic membership gift of $40 or more entitles you to your subscription of the great magazine Patterns that comes from WILL. It talks about TV and radio, AM and FM. And with a first-time contribution of $75, you'll also receive a membership card from WILL that entitles you to discounts at some very generous restaurants, bed and breakfasts, other entertainment venues throughout this state and Indiana and other states. So please consider becoming a member and making a contribution. That number again is 244-9455. But now I'm going to give you another number in case you have a question for our guest today here on Keeping the Faith. This is a live call-in show. And here at WILL, you can call us at 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, we have a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. So anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, you may punch in 1-800-222-WILL. So we're eager to have questions or comments about what we're talking about today, which is the legalization of marijuana. We've begun by talking about the medicinal use of marijuana. Now, some people say that there are other things that can provide the same help that marijuana does to people who are going through chemotherapy, for example, or having AIDS treatments that don't give you that high. And why not use those?
For some people, they don't work as well. Specifically for glaucoma, there's many people who there's no way any other medication relieves any of their suffering. Because glaucoma, the way it works with the pressure in your eyes, and that's what causes the pain, smoked marijuana is the only way to relieve that pressure for them. And they're actually, their medications have become toxic to their body, and it's actually bad for them to take their glaucoma medication.
Other kind of medication.
Mm-hmm. And with chemotherapy, I've never talked with someone specifically about their experiences with how marijuana benefits their chemotherapy, but I think of it as very similar to the AIDS wasting syndrome, which I've talked to someone about that, and he said, you know, marijuana doesn't cure his AIDS, but he has to take a lot of medications, like swallow a lot of pills for the AIDS symptoms, and without marijuana, he can't keep that down, because maybe a lot of people don't know that marijuana relieves nausea. Oh. And so it helps you keep food down, it helps you keep pills down so that your medication can help you. As far as with the case with AIDS and chemotherapy, it's the same thing, the nausea. It creates an appetite for people who wouldn't normally have an appetite. That's why people who have anorexia are sometimes recommended, their doctor recommends, you know, if nothing else, why don't you could smoke marijuana and it would create an appetite. Whether you like it or not, you have this biological urge to eat after you smoke.
People talk about getting the munchies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's a biological thing. It's not in your head. Huh. You can prevent that by willpower, but it is also something that is just a biological effect of the marijuana. So it creates an appetite, whether you want to eat or not.
Now, there's been a lot of it seems like the federal government, has been strongly against marijuana, seeing it as a gateway drug, as a way that people start getting the first experience of this euphoria that comes with drugs and alcohol and other things like that. And then that leads to either a psychological addiction or it leads to the use of harder drugs, more physiologically addictive drugs. So what do you say about that?
Well, I know that there's absolutely no scientific evidence to link marijuana with harder drugs. As far as the gateway theory, there's no biological link, no scientific evidence. But there is the fact that marijuana is illegal, as is heroin and cocaine. So if you're going to go buy marijuana, the people that are selling to you also have other things a lot of the times. And they're going to want you to try those other things because those other things are what's addictive and that's going to keep you coming back, whereas marijuana is not addictive. So that's
physiologically.
One,
what about psychologically?
Psychologically, I would say so, just like anything else. Like coffee for me is more psychological sometimes. I just want coffee because my mom drinks it a lot. The smell of it makes me think of her, so I want to drink it. Mm-hmm. Marijuana produces, it makes a lot of people happier than they would normally be. So they, if you want to be happy, you want to smoke it. The same way that eating ice cream is a comfort food for some people. That's a psychological dependence, I think.
Okay, I'll admit I ate about a quart last night. I mean, you've got my number. and given that, is that enough of a danger from your perspective that people should be careful with the use of marijuana? I mean, it's apparently very plentiful and available and cheap. Is that danger of the psychological addiction enough that do you think people should be careful? Should young people, for example?
Of course. I think that you should be careful with cigarettes and alcohol. I think cigarettes and alcohol are much worse than marijuana, but still marijuana, there's concerns. You don't want to drive when you've smoked it. The same reason you don't want to drive when you're tired. You know, it's just basic harm reduction with drug use, admitting that people are going to use drugs. So we want to educate them about them and tell them the risks. So marijuana, the only risk I can think is that you don't want to drive. I don't think kids should, you know, I think the age should be 18 if it were legal, so that you're making an adult informed decision about your choices. But I think it's actually less risky than cigarettes and alcohol, and which are legal.
Uh-huh. Since marijuana currently is illegal, and you have to buy it from someone who is breaking the law, or grow it yourself somehow and get the seeds. Right? Does it grow from seeds, or do you have to get?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you know what strength it is, or quality, or if it has other stuff in it that you may not want?
You don't know, and in my opinion, people who are so in support of it being illegal are somewhat concerned with control.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I think it's out of control. I think that the fact that it's illegal pushes it underground and makes it risky. You don't know what's in it. It hasn't been approved by the FDA. It isn't sold by a business who has a reputation mm-hmm. to uphold. It's sold by someone who wants to make money. And
who makes an effort to be anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that where drugs are legal, they're safer. For instance, in the Netherlands, heroin, if you want to do heroin, you can go to a church and use heroin in the basement of the church where there's like a section set aside for it. The heroin is approved by the health department, so it's not a strength or it's not tainted. And if you should have a problem with it, a reaction to it, there's a medical professional on the scene at all times, and you only are allowed to take a certain amount so that you can't overdose. And the connection, obviously, heroin is different from marijuana for sure, but this is a safer environment than if people were buying heroin on the street and using it at their will in the alley. They're in a public place where there's medical professionals around.
Now, marijuana is also legal in the Netherlands, in Holland, and it can be, you can go to what, coffee shops,
mm-hmm.
cafes, and smoke there,
mm-hmm.
and purchase it there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's regulated. It's, I guess, grown by people who follow certain rules. What's the experience in Holland? Has the use of marijuana gone up dramatically? What percentage of people might use marijuana there?
In the Netherlands, where marijuana is legal, there are more marijuana users than in the United States, but there are far less heroin and cocaine addicts,
huh.
and there are no overdoses.
Now, are you talking about percentage of the population?
Yes.
Okay.
Proportional. The United States has far more hard drug users and far more overdoses and the spread of HIV because of intravenous use, whereas in the Netherlands, you have more people smoking marijuana, but much less people using these harder drugs.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Danielle Schumacher, who's the assistant director of the Illinois chapter of NORML, the national organization to reform marijuana laws. If you'd like to call us with a comment or question, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. We'll access several lines. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. And we do have a caller on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I would like to ask the guest if she could talk a little bit about the rate of women who go to jail for breaking laws against possession of marijuana. She said at the beginning of the program that she got involved in this issue because of the rate of African Americans that were in prison because of drug possession charges and that. And I wondered if she could talk about both in terms of women and African Americans that issue a little bit. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate the question.
Sure. Since I just became interested in this about a year ago, I'm not as strong with throwing numbers out there. But as far as in the context with the African-American rates in prison, that's, you know, the highest percentage of people that are in prison for drug offenses. Women, unfortunately, the women who are serving time for drug offenses were usually aiding a boyfriend or a husband or a significant other, like the male drug dealer. And they were looking to make some money and maybe ran some drugs here or there. I really can't speak to different numbers and percentages, but
You don't have those statistics.
That's not something that I've heard is a huge problem, that there's like so many women in prison for it, because as you know, women generally are the smaller numbers in prison by far.
We have another caller waiting. Let's go to line two. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. Does medicinal marijuana have to be smoked, or can't the chemicals that are beneficial be isolated and then, for example, put in a nebulizer, the way you treat someone with a lung issue?
Right. The vaporizers are a much healthier way to ingest it, because obviously biggest health concern with marijuana to me is the effects on your lungs. And vaporizers are much healthier and do work for a lot of the create a lot of the same effects. There is also a pill form, which the people that I've talked to who use the pill, that it's a synthetic THC, they say it doesn't work. They say they don't take it. It's not even worth their time, because the only way for them to feel the effects is to smoke it. Especially with glaucoma, smoked marijuana is the only way. The vaporizers don't even really do as good of a job.
And what about marijuana in brownies? I've heard about that.
I think that as far as creating the appetite, that's still there, helping you sleep and reducing nausea, that's still there. But for a lot, to get the strongest effect, I mean, it's just direct, kind of unhealthy for your lungs, but you're kind of doing the trade-off. Like, what if you're terminally ill and you're in a lot of pain? Do you really care, like, if it's hurting your lungs a little bit? I would say probably not. Mm-hmm. And it is also the effect on your lungs. It's much less than the effect of cigarettes on your lungs. And so
knowing you're going to be on the show this week, I've had my eye out for articles mm-hmm. and editorials and things on this topic. And I was a bit surprised that both yesterday and today in the Chicago Tribune, yesterday in an editorial and today in an op-ed piece, there's been articles basically in support of at least the medicinal use of marijuana. Does that kind of support from what's traditionally a conservative Republican newspaper surprise you?
You know, I have a lot of hope in people in general, and so it doesn't surprise me, because I would think everyone knows someone who suffered from cancer or just even pain of some sort, any sort of very painful conditions. If you just stop and think, oh, you know, my wife or my mother or someone had cancer and was really suffering, and you've been through that, and if you know even a little bit of the truth about the effects of marijuana, I think it makes sense that people support it. But it was also surprising, yes, to see it covered so well in media in Chicago, and it's very, it's good news.
Now, How extensive is marijuana use today in the U.S. in spite of the fact that it's illegal?
It's very widespread. It's actually, and as one of these editorials says, it's a lot of high school students say it's easier to get marijuana than to get cigarettes or alcohol. So no matter how much money we're spending, how many years we've been waging this war on drugs, it's actually easy to obtain.
And how much does it cost?
It depends. It can cost as little as $5, as much as, you know, in the hundreds, depending on how much you buy and how good it is. But for $5, a high school student would have no problem getting some.
We have another caller waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Danielle Schumacher. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I have a comment and a question. The comment is that I think this is a great solution for nausea, for cancer patients and AIDS patients and all that. The question is, how do we regulate this? I mean, is there, I know it's illegal, but how do we regulate it? Other countries have ways of people participating, but how do we regulate it in this company, or in this country? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Well, I'll use the case of Oakland, California, where medical marijuana is legal. And of course that's abused. Of course people, doctors give out prescriptions to people who don't really need it for something very serious. But the experience there is that it's framed in the way, talking about it as safe access for medication. So, in Oakland, and if this bill passes in Illinois, the way it would be regulated is that your doctor, your primary caregiver, has to say that they recommend it for a debilitating medical condition. And the medical conditions that are recognized are approved by a panel of scientific experts. So first, some science has to establish that, yes, marijuana has beneficial effects for these conditions. Then you have to go to your primary caregiver and they say, I agree with that and I agree that you need it. Then you apply to Department of Health and Human Services and they have to approve it. So it is actually a very regulated system, and of course there will be people abusing that. You can't prevent that, just as you can't prevent people from abusing the fact that you have to be 21 to drink alcohol, but we know so many people younger than that drink. So
I want to get back to that issue in just a moment, but we're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program this afternoon. This program comes to you every Sunday afternoon from 5 to 6 Central Time. It's a live call-in show, and we do encourage listeners who have comments or questions to punch in our numbers, 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana area. Elsewhere, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Our WILL audience is growing over the last 5 years here on Keeping the Faith. We know from various ways that our audience has grown. It's now time for new listeners to help support WILL financially. Listener contributions are our largest single source of revenue. And if you've never made a contribution to WILL Radio, please do it now during this special Leap Year Weekend new member campaign. We have a different number for you to call to make a contribution. You can call 217-244-9455. That's 244-WILL. Or you can make your gift online at our secure website, will.uiuc.edu. And this weekend particularly, we're very happy that two longtime listeners to WILL have made a special challenge for people who will give for the first time. We have a promise of a $29 gift from Tom and Catherine Yancey for every person who becomes a new friend of WILL, either yesterday or today, either by phone or online. So please make the leap this leap year day and give your contribution, whatever size, and that'll generate another $29 for WILL from our good friends Tom and Catherine Yancey. Today is Catherine's birthday. She's only 1/4 as old as people born yesterday on the same year. These Keeping the Faith programs are supported in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I'm the executive director. My name is Steve Shoemaker. the WISE, the oldest religious institution at the University of Illinois, and for 131 years has been helping develop student leadership by providing opportunities for community service and social action. We have many students who tutor in the public schools, who are concerned about environmental issues, who are involved in, like Danielle, things like Amnesty International. So the Y is happy to support this program. Coming up this week at the Y on Tuesday, Know Your University at noon, Cecil Bridgewater and Company, in cooperation with the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, that's bringing the local jazz trumpeter Cecil Bridgewater here several times this year. There'll be a free concert and discussion about jazz March 2nd, this coming Tuesday at noon at the University Y. It's free. You can pick up a Thai lunch while you're there, or just bring your own lunch, or just come and listen. He spoke with us last fall and played with a couple student jazz musicians in an impromptu jam session, I guess you'd call it, and it was great. So it's coming up again this Tuesday. And this Friday at the Y, University Y, March 5th, in our 78th year of Friday forums on Fridays at noon, on the topic of searching for democracy, completing the American Revolution in your neighborhood will be the topic of Clayton Doffenbaugh, who's an author. He'll be talking about his experience in doing neighborhood organization, community organization. So that's this Friday at the Y. Coming up tonight, one of the programs the University of Hawaii co-sponsors with as part of the Whirlwind Project, there's a concert at McKinley Presbyterian Church. That's tonight, February 29, Leap Year Day, 7 o'clock. Sounds of Meditation, Music and Motion, from many different religious traditions that use prayer and meditation. Music tonight, and that with that as the theme. That's at McKinley Presbyterian Church, which is on the corner of 5th and John Street, 809 South 5th, and that's a free concert tonight at 7 o'clock. Hope some of you can make that. It should be an enjoyable experience. And one last announcement before we get back to our guest, Danielle Schumacher, talking about the reform of marijuana laws. The University Y is also a charity that counts on its friends who donate to it to survive. And we've been accepting cars and pickup trucks as donations. And we just received another one last week that's now we're selling. We do this ourselves. We don't do it through a third party. And we have a 95 Saturn, 5-speed, manual transmission, one owner, 9-year-old car. It has 125,000 miles, but the way it's been taken care of, I'd predict many more miles to come. It's for sale at the Y, $2,495. Give me a call, Steve Shoemaker, 337-1500, if you'd be interested. Back to our guest today, who's been very patient through all these announcements. Danielle Schumacher is the Assistant Director of the Illinois Normal Organization, and we're happy to have her talking with us today about marijuana. If you'd like to ask her a question, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. We have another call waiting, also very patiently on line one. You're on the air.
Hi, my question, I've got to admit that I did tune in late, but my question was as far as talking about the different ways to administer the marijuana as far as a nebulizer or smoking it. I was just wondering if your guest could cite any medical literature, if this was just anecdotal evidence. That was my question, just to see what the medical research had been done into that.
Sure. There's actually a journal of cannabis therapeutics, and it's actually somewhat complex. I have a hard time reading it, but there's more, there's easier books to read. One of them is fairly new. It's by Mitch Earlywine, and it's called Understanding Marijuana. And I found it very easy to read, but also very informative, and he covers everything in there. The other sources usually are from other countries where they sell the vaporizer and market this. There's one called the Volcano in Europe. So if you just, maybe if you're online and you look up the Volcano, it could explain how it works. And it's all based on scientific evidence because the volcano, it's very expensive and it's very complex the way it works. I can't explain it.
Now, does Normal have either the state Normal or national Normal have a website that would also give people links to scientific literature?
Yes. Normal is just norml.org. That would definitely have a lot of links. Even our local website, which is www.uiucnorml.org. There's a lot of scientific literature out there. You just have to find for yourself the one that you find most readable and specific to what you want to find out. It's definitely out there. And in this area, we've got great libraries, and they have most of the books that I ever have wanted or needed for this issue. They have them.
Now, what do you think of some of the things that are in the popular culture about marijuana? Like in 1999, there was a documentary that came out just called Grass, and Woody Harrelson, the actor, narrated it. It was funny. It's on cable TV. It's widely distributed. It's available in, I presume, all the video stores. What kind of effect does that have when that kind of information comes out, given the fact that marijuana is illegal in this country?
Mm-hmm. I think that things like High Times, this magazine about marijuana, there's a lot of, like, Cheech and Chong. This is all the types of things I think of as pop culture, gives people their ideas about marijuana in media and everything. I think it's good on one hand because it helps people see that it's a very important part of our culture and it's longstanding. I mean, this movie Grass, it goes back to the 1800s and it shows clips from this film Hemp for Victory that the government put out encouraging people during World War II to grow hemp. And to me, that was very, very interesting that just, I mean, it's not recent, but depending on who you know, relatively in history, during World War II, that our government was advocating for farmers to grow hemp because of the environmental benefits. So it's a very important part of our culture. It's very recently, relatively, that we've all of a sudden waged this war on it. On the other hand, though, I think that what I try to do is give a serious, legitimate spin on this, that this is a serious issue. There's over 2 million people in our prisons now in this country, and over half of them are nonviolent drug offenders. So to me, this is a serious issue. And with medical marijuana, there's people call me all the time from around the state saying, I'm in extreme pain. Please, please help me get my medicine legally. And so to me, that's a constant reminder that this is a very serious issue. And when you have things like High Times and Cheech and Chong, I hate to see it become a joke.
It trivializes it.
Yes.
Or can.
And I don't blame the opposition for saying, you know, they use these stereotypes of dreadlocks and potheads and hippies, but that's just one part of marijuana users. That's just one small section of drug users. And to use those stereotypes to trivialize it, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because there's a lot of serious issues going on here, too.
Now, in terms of the people in prison, you said you got interested in this, for those who might have missed the first part of our program, because you were involved and, in fact, a leader in the local Amnesty International group, and you were concerned because of the high number of people in prison serving long years because of marijuana use. And they may have been arrested by the police with a very small amount of marijuana. Mm-hmm. And some of the things in the Tribune op-ed piece this morning, for example, gave some real horror stories about people in some states who were arrested serving long terms. Other people who may be caught with the same thing get off. I mean, it seems like just the fact that it's so uneven and unjust would be one reason to consider this.
I compare it to Amnesty also has a stance against the death penalty, and their slogan for a little while was too flawed to fix. Uh-huh. So maybe you agree with the death penalty as a deterrent and all these things, but judges and cops are racist. You can't escape
some.
That. Some. I mean, you can never escape racism and racial profiling and all these things. So if these laws allow for people to enforce them in a racist way, you know, I think that when there's these very obvious racial disparities in the way drug laws are enforced. I think that's a huge problem. And I wish that there was some compromise, you know. But when it comes to those laws that, I mean, there really isn't a compromise. Everyone, there's always going to be that disparity and that racism, in my opinion.
One of the big concerns for me is just the cost. I know since I was on the county board, and I'm not up for re-election, so I'm not I'm not campaigning here. But when I was elected to the local county board, I was just astounded at how much local county money in the Champaign County goes to maintain the jails, support the sheriff's system, support the courts. It's over half of our budget. And you said how many people are in the prisons nationally because of drug problems?
Well, there's over 2 million in prison in this country, and over half of them, so over 1 million people are there for drug offenses. And one of the statistics I do have is that one-fourth of $1 billion is spent in Illinois each year to incarcerate drug offenders, a fourth of $1 billion every year. So I know that that money could be going to better uses. And I really like this new way of talking about this issue that's really important to me. It's you're given a choice between education or incarceration. If you look at budgets for states and even on a national level, where do we want to be putting our money and our tax dollars? Into educating people, starting when they're young with children, drug education, public education, or do we want to be spending all this money on prisons, the prison industrial complex? It's just, it's scary.
Now, how would you educate people about marijuana?
I think that programs like DARE, they maybe are well-intentioned, but there's so many people that are just misinformed about drugs and the risks involved with them. So a good example is if your DARE officer told you that all of these drugs, you know, marijuana, cocaine, heroin, ecstasy, etc., they're all completely addictive, they're all horrible, you should never do them. Well, chances are you're going to try one of them. Chances are you're going to start with marijuana because it's most available and it's, you know, not as hard of a drug as the others. And you start with that and you realize right away, this isn't addictive. This isn't crazy and horrible the way that he said or she. I mean, where is the legitimacy if you're being fed lies and misinformation and then you find out for yourself that, you know, the truth? I think the way to educate is to be honest. You know, I babysit and I'm not going to lie to these kids. I'm also not going to endorse things. But if they ask me direct questions about drugs, which they haven't really yet, but it's I've been thinking about it because I've been with them a lot, that it's really important to not lie to kids. And drugs is a good example. You don't want to lie because they need to know. Because if they do try them, they need to know what the risks are. They need to know that if they're going to try cocaine, that it's highly addictive. And I think that lumping it together with marijuana is a horrible idea. I think it just, it's, you're not giving kids the right information if you're lumping very addictive drugs with non-addictive drugs.
If marijuana becomes legal in the United States, how would you then educate people? Would you compare it with alcohol, for example, tobacco, which are both legal and both addictive?
I would say that, surprise, it's much better for you than alcohol and nicotine. And we need to look past the laws and look at our real life experiences with these different drugs, because alcohol is the leading cause of death when you look at all the other drugs. And I have this information right here that tobacco kills 430,000 people a year, alcohol 110,000, marijuana zero. So to me, it's just a matter of getting that truth out there and that information from legitimate sources to people once it's legal. And even now, even when it's illegal, that's my main goal, is to just help people discover the truth about the different drugs.
We have another caller on line one. Before I go to that call, let me remind others we can probably sneak in one or two other calls in Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455 or elsewhere 1-800-222-9455 is a free call. Let's go to line one. Go ahead. Yes, line one.
My question has to do with the detection of the use of substances, alcohol, drugs, or any form. First of all, the consumption of alcohol is pretty easily detected today, and the effects generally wear off at the rate of about 1 hour per drink consumed. That is, if you're really on a binge, why within a day or so, it's not detectable in your system. However, regarding marijuana and marijuana only, if one has been smoking marijuana, how long, what at the present state of medical technology, how long after the fact can it be detected in your system, and by what means, please? Thanks very much. That's what I'd like to know.
I think there's hair tests that can detect it months later. And
by analyzing human hair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The most popular way of testing is urine tests, and that's, I think, around 8 days or something. It's a long time relative to other drugs. And so, for instance, I think what maybe he's hinting at or what it makes me think of is if it were legal and we started being concerned with people driving under the influence, mm-hmm. You can't really tell at the time of the test what's causing their intoxication. Is it actually marijuana, or did they smoke 8 days ago?
And how long does the effect last?
The effect only lasts, well, depending on how much you smoke, I mean, a few hours, maybe several hours at the most. But you would have to keep smoking and smoking.
It can be detected beyond that.
Oh, definitely. Okay. It's detected far beyond the actual intoxicating effects.
And there's no way of measuring the effect like you can with a breathalyzer for alcohol. Like, you know, they give you numbers, you know, you're this
right.
drunk.
It's not that easy, but other countries do it. And there are tests that can detect at the time that you're pulled over for driving under the influence, you can do basic tests to see. But we need to know more about marijuana, and we need to have an open dialogue about it so that we can understand people's behavior when they're on it.
Is it legal to do research on marijuana in the United States right now?
It is legal, but it's not really ever allowed. I mean, as far as how much money is given to support that kind of testing, it's very low.
I see. We have another caller waiting on line two. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Danielle Schumacher.
Yes. The question I have for you comes out of an experience of an acquaintance of mine. He was a pretty heavy marijuana smoker, and at one point he knew he was going to be tested within 24 hours, and his urge to smoke it was so strong that he couldn't keep himself from doing it. And my question is marijuana addictive in the same way that, you know, alcohol or a lot of different drugs are? Is it only like a psychological dependence?
We were talking before about the gateway theory, and like I said, there's no scientific evidence to show that it's a biological dependence. To me, in my experiences, it's social, it's a part of your daily routine. For some people, if you smoke enough of it or have like a high enough quality, it can actually function as an escape, just like psychedelic drugs could. So that this person who has a very strong urge to smoke it must have been smoking a lot of it for a long time. And I would just say is trying to escape something, just like you use any substance for. That's the only time I can think where it would be the most addictive, is if you're using it as some sort of escape.
And when you use the term addictive there, you're talking about psychological addiction.
Dependence. It's more of a dependence. Uh-huh. I mean, it's a part of your daily routine.
But that can be a very strong thing.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So there is risk.
Oh, for sure. And okay. I'm not trying to say that it's healthy for you. But uh-huh. especially when you put it in the same class as alcohol, nicotine, cocaine, heroin, any of those things, it's by far the least biologically addicting, obviously, and even the dependence level is very low, because as soon as you stop smoking it, even for a day, it's easy to substitute something else, whereas, you know, other drugs give you a physical withdrawal and marijuana does not.
We have another caller on our toll-free line, line four. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I think it's illegal, but if it helps the human beings, I guess it's good to go. I'm not for it too much. Marijuana has always been illegal. I'm 28 years of age. I've always been good to stay away from it, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's good for, I mean, it's up to each person to decide if they want to use it or not, and I'm not endorsing it for people to use. if they don't want to. I'm not saying everyone should, but for sure, if there's all these people in Illinois suffering from all these different conditions and it can help them, I mean, I don't see why we need to keep it from them.
Well, we thank you for that comment. We haven't talked at all about hemp, and I don't want to get into it very much because I don't know much about it. But but apparently, for many years, after that time in World War II when the government was encouraging farmers to grow hemp as an alternative crop because we couldn't import it because of the war, after that it became illegal to grow when there were all these fears about marijuana. But just recently, was it just in the last couple of years, it's now legal again to grow hemp under certain circumstances? Is that accurate?
I think it's still illegal to grow it. I think that you can walk into, there's a few stores in this area where you can go to get hemp foods and beauty products and health products.
And clothing can be made from
hemp. Yeah. And in Chicago, you can definitely find hemp clothing all over the place, but you can't grow it because there's this fear that if you can grow hemp, then you're going to also be growing marijuana. Which this is an area where, yeah, me too. I don't know all that much about it to talk about it articulately, but I do know that this is the area where there's the most lies and all the misinformation, because hemp is completely different from marijuana. Hemp has a very low amount of THC, which is the psychoactive, what gives you that psychoactive effects. And actually, hemp has something that acts as the opposite of the THC and kind of cancels it out. You can't smoke hemp the way you can smoke marijuana. It's a completely different plant and used for completely different things. And if you try to grow them in the same field, it's not going to work. The marijuana is going to be too weak to smoke and get an effect from. Mm.
We have another caller on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi. I have two comments and then a question. And the first comment is, I really want to thank you for the show. There are very few opportunities for folks to talk about the use of marijuana in an intelligent and articulate way. So I really appreciate the show.
You're welcome.
And it's also a show that I've listened to on and off, and I really appreciate your courage in taking on an issue and dealing with it kind of neutrally rather than in some kind of a moral issue kind of way. And my second comment is, I was struck by how apologetic most of the callers are if they're calling to, like, find out about it or to say something that might be something kind of positive or even neutral. Everyone sounds very apologetic, and obviously marijuana is illegal, and so maybe that accounts for some of it, but I don't think it accounts for all of it. I think that points to the power of legality and illegality and how that affects the way we look at the things that we do. And I mean that specifically because, again, alcohol abuse, tobacco, any other kind of drug, obesity, the overuse of food or the underuse, anorexia, these are severe health issues in this country. And we talk about all of those in a much more kind of normal way, or at least without the apology, without the stigma that folks seem to have with the use of marijuana. And so those are my two comments, and my question is, why do you think that there's been so much fear, so much scare, almost hysteria about the use? I mean, I know there were films done, oh, gosh, I guess in the 50s or 60s, I don't remember which.
Even in as early as the 30s, to scare people away from marijuana.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there was this whole thing done with the use of the weed or whatever, and it went so over the top and clearly way outside of data that it actually kind of encouraged lots of folks, because it was like, well, those people aren't telling us the truth because this is not what happens. I mean, my understanding, I listen to student speeches all the time, and my understanding is nobody's ever died from marijuana use. Nobody's ever killed anybody from marijuana use. I mean, it's not, if you take a look at the health risks and the social risks, it's like way down low, but that's certainly not how it's been treated. And so I wondered if you had any comments on why it is that there's such...
Sure. I think that it's a, I think it's a business. I think the prison industrial complex, I think that the funding is there for prisons and to build them, and we need to keep people, keep arresting people to fill them. I think it's, there's a long history. It's hard to pinpoint and talk about it simply, but I mean, the lies that the Office of Drug Control and the DEA have been feeding the public is continuing to fuel this year after year. And the drug czar himself doesn't really seem to understand marijuana and other drugs. And the people who work in these government offices, they themselves are just misinformed, and they use the sources that they want to use rather than the actual truth. And also, because it's illegal, like you said, people feel ashamed about it, and instead of looking past the laws and just at the issues, they think this is illegal, we shouldn't research this, we shouldn't question this, we shouldn't tell our kids about this. There's this constant, it's the same way our country doesn't talk about sex, and it's a fear, and it's kept secret and quiet, and that's where all the confusion comes in, and that's why people, if there's no open dialogue, how can people really come to the truth about something?
It's interesting that, when President Jimmy Carter was in office, that he moved to at least decriminalize the mm-hmm. use of marijuana as for medicinal purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And yet presidents since have not.
Right. He took it back, too, and never did that. And actually, in Ohio, it's been decriminalized since the 70s. And if anyone's interested in decriminalization, that's a really successful case. If you have fears about crime rates or people using more drugs when they become legal, you can look at Ohio. It's a state close by, or you can look at the Netherlands.
Well, I think we're going to have to stop there, Danielle. We've been speaking with Danielle Schumacher, who's the assistant director of the State of Illinois Organization of NORML, the national organization for the reform of marijuana laws. If you'd like to contact her, she's given me permission to give her email address, which is Danielle, D-A-N-I-E-L-L-E, at IllinoisNORML, N-O-R-M-L .org. And if you'd like to check out their website, that's normal.org as well. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, and it's my pleasure to get to encourage people who listen to WILL to consider making a contribution. Perhaps you haven't given for a while. It's been a while since you last made a contribution, or maybe you never have. And for yesterday and today, we have a special challenge where someone will be matching your gift with a $29 gift. If you will make a pledge. So please call 217-244-9455, or you may use our secure website with a credit card. That's WILL.UIUC.EDU. $40 will get you a subscription to Patterns, great magazine. If it's $75, you also get a membership card that will get you a lot of discounts at restaurants and bed and breakfasts and other entertainment. We do thank Tom and Catherine Yancey for making this special gift of $29 to match other donors. Next week here on Keeping the Faith, our guest will be John Sederlin talking about Box B Minor Mass. That's March 7 here at 5 o'clock on Keeping the Faith. I'm Steve Shoemaker, your usual host, and thank you for listening, and thank you for all of our callers with comments.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
How do you soak in the essence of a city? In New York, writer Colson Whitehead goes walking through Times Square, along Broadway, down into the subway. In Memphis, critic Robert Gordon listens to its music, the blues, soul, rock and roll. I'm Jim Fleming. We'll see how different cities inspire their writers and artists next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at 7 on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Prairie Boat Works, Champaign; Lincoln Diagnostics Incorporated, Decatur; and Bodywork Associates in Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, showers and thunderstorms developing by midnight, the low in the upper 40s with south winds 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, rain and thunderstorms likely in the morning, a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, breezy with the high in the lower 60s and south winds 15 to 25 miles per hour and gusting. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain in the evening, then partly cloudy after midnight, brisk with the low around 40 degrees and west winds 15 to 25 miles per hour and gusting. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.